अथे वासुदेवायाम् ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवायाम् ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवायाम् So this is text number 7 that we're chanting now. Indro Bhagavata Datam Trilokya Shriyam Urjitam Gunjanaha Pati Lokam Strin Kamam Loke Pravarshati Indro Bhagavata Datam Vailokya Shriyam Urjitam Munjana Pati Lokam Trin Kamam Loke Pravarchati Indro Bhagavata Datam Vailokya Shriyam Urjitam Gunjana Pati Lokam Strin Kaman Loke Pravarshati. Please chant. Lady. Word synonyms. Indraha, the King of Heaven. Bhagavata, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tatam, given. Trilokya, of the three worlds. Shriyam Urjitam, the great opulence. Gunjanaha, enjoying. Pati, maintains. Lokan, all the planets. Trin, within the three worlds, Kaman, as much as necessary, Loke, within the world, Pravarshati, pours rain. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Indra, the King of Heaven, receiving benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus enjoying highly developed opulence, maintains the living entities all over the three worlds by pouring sufficient rain on all the planets. There's no purport, so we'll go to the next verse, which does have a purport. Yanam chanu yugam brutei hari siddhasvarupadrik vishirupadara karma yogam yogesha rupadrik. Translation. In every age, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, assumes the form of siddhas, such as sanak, to preach transcendental knowledge. He assumes the form of great saintly persons, such as Yajñavalkya, to teach the way of karma. He's a very famous sage in the Upanishads. And he assumes the form of great yogis, such as Dattatreya, to teach the system of mystic yoga. So please repeat, in every yuga, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, assumes the form of siddhas, such as Sanak, to preach transcendental knowledge. He assumes the form of great saintly persons, such as Yajñavalkya, to teach the way of karma. And he assumes the form of great yogis, such as Dattatreya, to teach the system of mystic yoga. Purport. For the benefit of all human society, not only does the Lord assume the form of Manu as an incarnation to rule the universe properly, but he also assumes the forms of a teacher, yogi, jnani, and so on, for the benefit of human society. The duty of human society, therefore, is to accept the path of action enunciated by the Supreme Lord. In the present age, the path of action enunciated by the Supreme... In the present age, the sum and substance of all Vedic knowledge is to be found in Bhagavad Gita, which is personally taught by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, assuming the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, expands the teachings of Bhagavad Gita all over the world. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is so kind and merciful to human society that he is always anxious to take the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitam Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. And I beg for the prayers of all the Vaishnavas that I may say something useful and beneficial for all of us, including myself, so that this will be a spiritually profitable half hour. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend to this world. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion I myself appear millennium after millennium. To deliver the fallen, this is what he's saying. In other words, Krishna comes in so many different forms in various ages. He comes as a Vishnu Tattva, as we have in Lord Vishnu. We have Krishna, of course, and Vamana Dev, and Kapila Dev. And he also comes in his empowered incarnations, Shakyavesha Avatar incarnations. This is all the mercy of the Lord. In his Shakyavesha Avatar, we have Narada Muni, who's an incarnation of bhakti, an incarnation of love. He strums on his veena, and he sings beautiful songs inspired by Krishna, and he offers them to Krishna. And Krishna, being pleased by them, gives his blessings not only to Narada Muni, but to everyone and anyone. Since when Krishna is pleased, especially by his devotees, he is especially eager to share the pleasure that he has in the form of love with all of his children all over the world. And those who are receptive to that message, those who are eager to serve and praise and glorify Krishna, feel that pleasure, feel that bliss, feel that happiness. Lord Brahma, Shakyavesha Avatar, Vyasadeva, a literary incarnation, the four Kumaras, incarnations of Jnana. So all of these great sages and saints, they all serve the Lord's purpose in bringing or assisting the Lord in bringing order, bringing understanding, bringing knowledge, bringing the principle of divine love to the people in general, and set a very wonderful standard of how we should conduct ourselves, how we should behave, how we should interact with one another. For example, we have our Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, who wrote so many wonderful, beautiful books. And in Rupa Goswami's books, as we know, the Nectar of Instruction, there are so many, I shouldn't say so many, but there are several chapters on just what we should do and what we should not do for our devotional service. For example, in the second text, Rupa says one should not eat more than necessary or collect more funds than are required. This spoils devotional service. So one should not eat more than necessary or collect more funds than are required. Over-endeavor for mundane things that are difficult to attain. Talk unnecessarily. Worthless subject matter. Talk unnecessarily. Practice the rules and regulations only for the sake of merely practicing them, but really for the sake of attaining spiritual advancement. For the sake of spiritual advancement. And also he has six other spoilers. I just left out the last one. One should not be greedy for mundane attainments. And then again, the things we should do, one should be enthusiastic, endeavor with confidence, always be patient, follow the regulative principles of hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, abandon the association of non-devotees, and follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So these are the types of messages that our great acharyas, our great sages and saints bring to us. And then we have our Srila Prabhupada, who explains these, gives purports, gives commentary to elucidate on these principles. In other words, he takes these books and he distills the very essence of these principles so that we can understand them, so that we can practice them, we can implement them in our life, and we can enrich our lives and enrich the lives of others by enabling them also to learn them and to practice them and to spread them here, there, and everywhere. So what struck me most in this purport is this part where Srila Prabhupada uses the words In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is so kind and merciful to human society that he is always anxious to take the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. If Krishna has only one anxiety, it's this. How can I get all my children back home? It's pretty much like even in a family situation. You have children, they leave home and you haven't seen them in weeks, months, sometimes years. And you want to see them. So Krishna doesn't just want to see them, but he wants to see them in their original position. Their original position, of course, is that of the servant of the Lord. When we are all situated properly as lovingly serving Krishna, you know, in pure devotional service, that gives Krishna great pleasure. Krishna doesn't need bliss. He's always blissful. He doesn't need peace. He doesn't need strength. He's omnipotent. He doesn't need love. He's self-contained, self-sufficient. Atmaram, he's self-satisfied. And yet, his bliss, his peace, his strength, his everything increases when his devotee expresses pure love to him. That is his nourishment. That is his food. That is what we might say in modern parlance, what turns him on. And there is nothing that turns him on more than just pure love. Pure love means that we perform our devotional service in such a way that we do it carefully. We do it thoughtfully. We do it movingly. We do it with a conscious desire to give pleasure to Krishna. We may not be able to do that in one stream steadily for hour after hour, but even in a punctuated fashion, even for a few minutes, may you be pleased with this service, Lord. May this give you satisfaction, Lord. May this increase your pleasure, Lord. The devotee is not looking for or asking for or expecting any return from Krishna for this. The only thing that he hopes for is that he can continue performing his service in an even better and an even purer and an even more perfect fashion. Because the better it is, the purer it is, the more perfect it is, the more pleasing it will be to the Supreme Lord. That is the sum and substance of a devotee's life, to give more and more pleasure to Krishna. This is what the gopis of Vrindavan are about. This is all they did, all they thought about, night and day. They sang songs to Krishna when he was out in the pasturing ground. When they were cooking or they were milking cows, they were doing this thinking of Krishna. And they were hoping and yearning for the moment that would come when they would see the dust coming up, when the cows would start coming home, because they knew very close behind Krishna and his cowherd boys would be there. And their faces would blossom up with such ecstasy, with such joy, because the whole day they'd been thinking of him, feeling about him, glorifying him. And when a person does that, that he or she associates with Krishna. And when we associate with Krishna through this means of consciously thinking about him, consciously glorifying him, consciously praising him, consciously dwelling on his wonderful, delightful, exciting pastimes, this brings such delight to the heart. So that when one sees she who has been feeling this intense separation from Krishna for 8 hours or 7 hours, finally sees the beloved, finally sees the dearest, it brings such an explosion of ecstasy. And they are so happy to see them. So happy they embrace one another. And they wish they could be embracing Krishna. But at that point, unless they come a little bit later on to the Ras dance, they're just in their mind embracing Krishna in their hearts. So the point I'm trying to bring out is not that we should imagine ourselves to be gopis. That is a very high, very advanced, exalted position. And Srila Prabhupada warns us against this. But we should have an aspiration. The aspiration is that we should desire to be like this. If you don't desire, you don't get. And we should pray to these gopis. Because that's the way when you get their blessings, get their love. They can say to Krishna, please, This devotee he's calling and crying out and praying to me and offering lamps to me and praising me. And all he wants is one thing, more love for you, Krishna. Would you be so kind as to bestow your mercy on this child? That's all he's asking. He's not asking for a car. He's not asking for a boat or an airplane. He's not asking for wealth or beauty or strength or influence or power. All he wants or all she wants is just to please you more, to please you better. Would you please grant him that? Well, the Lord is so obliged. He himself says he feels so obliged to all his great devotees that when they ask, or they pray to Krishna for something like that, he can't resist. Cannot resist. Because as he himself says, there is no way that I can ever repay you for the love that you have given me. It is so great. It is so mountainous. It is so incredibly towering that what can I do except accede to your request? He said, even if I give you that, I have given you nothing. When I give you something that you ask for, I've given you nothing. Because what you have given to me, Krishna says, is so oceanic, is so vast, is so great, so grand, so large, so powerful, that all I can do is give you one thing, really, and that's myself. So when he gives himself, of course, they get everything. When they get it, because Krishna is all bliss, he's all peace, he's all strength, he's all love, he's all everything. But especially he gives them his love. And in getting their love, his love, they feel fully satisfied, inflamed in their heart, and very happy, fulfilled, and joyful. So this is something to aspire for. We cannot jump into that mentality, as sometimes I've seen devotees, or as we call these sahajis in India, sometimes they, all you can do is just jump into it. You know what they do? They put on lipstick, you know, and they put on the rouge, and they put on the eyeshadow, and tweeze their eyelids, and wear saris. These are men trying to play the parts of gopis. And this is not the way to become a gopi. But then we have Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy, he's a governor. He's a male. He has to rule. He has to tell people what to do. He carries out the laws of the king. And yet within his heart, another life is going on. His life as a gopi. And Lord Chaitanya knows that. He knows so much about him. And that's why when he goes and on his first tour, I can't remember the Vidyanagara, I believe it was, where he stops there and he meets with Ramananda Roy. And in so doing, they begin talking. And he begins asking. It's kind of like it's asking questions from the very basics of Krishna consciousness, going to a higher and higher and higher and higher love, until finally he says, the greatest of all service is to give pleasure to Krishna continuously. This is the greatest pleasure. And it also brings the greatest degree of advancement. So when one forgets his own desire for pleasure, his own or her own desire for glory, her own desire for applause or approval, or own desire for to be glorified, when one no longer cares as to what people really think of him or her, but all he wants to do is get others to think of the glories of Krishna, the greatness of Krishna, the beauty of Krishna, the strength and power and influence of Krishna, that Krishna is our truly all in all. When he feels that that is his only occupation, that he is truly and rightly situated and getting a continual flow of ecstasy from the Supreme Lord every moment. Because all he's thinking about, all he's doing, and we saw this so beautifully illustrated in Srila Prabhupada, he was always in a state of ecstasy because he was always thinking of Krishna. As Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction, if I can remember that. That says a particular group of words that escapes my memory at the moment. It should come back. In which basically a bona fide spiritual master is defined. He realizes that his only business is to serve the Supreme Lord. He loses interest in everything except service to the Lord. He's always thinking of Krishna. He's always thinking of new ways to spread Krishna's holy name around, everywhere, anywhere. He understands that his only business is to spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world so that everyone can have the happiness that he has. Krishna is the biggest of givers, and his great devotees like Srila Prabhupada is also a big, great, gigantic giver. Look what he has given us, all these books. And at a great inconvenience, he was not always well, but he went on translating. Not always feeling well. Even on the Jaladuta, when he was coming here, he suffered a few heart attacks. But he did not get on the next ship back. He was determined to stay here and bring this mercy, this joyfulness, this peacefulness to everyone if possible. He had all these books to share with us. So this is again, it comes back to that same word of mercy. This is the mercy of the spiritual master. He wants everyone to be happy, everyone to be joyful, everyone to be fulfilled, everyone to be fully satisfied, everyone to be so happy, happier than he is. As Prabhupada so often said, yes, the guru wants the disciple to even excel him. Of course, the disciple should always feel, no matter how good he is in anything, that whatever he has gotten, better or worse, all comes from the mercy of the guru, all comes from the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So a devotee may think, I am nothing. I have nothing. I do nothing. I know nothing. I want nothing except one thing. Pure love of the Supreme Lord every moment of my life. When he says I am nothing, it means that whatever I supposedly am, people think I'm this, people think I'm that. I have this ability, I have that quality, I have this skill. I have all these, but they're not mine. They all belong to Krishna. They have been grafted onto me by the Lord. So they all belong to him. Therefore, if they belong to him, I have nothing except what he invests me with. I own nothing. The clothes on my back are given to me by Krishna. And he can take them away any moment. As I speak now, some people may be losing their clothes. Or don't have enough clothes. Krishna takes away. Krishna gives according to person's karmic reactions from his previous life. I am nothing. I have nothing. I do nothing. If I do something very well, exceptionally, greatly, people praise it and honor it and glorify it, well, is that my credit? No, it's Krishna's credit, because as Krishna says, I am the ability in man. It is his ability which is injected into us. It is his intelligence that enables us to have that ability. It is by Krishna's mercy that we live every moment, although we generally like to think that it is by our own endeavor, our own effort, our own eagerness, and that's it. But even our eagerness comes from Krishna. How can a person be cheerful? How can a person feel bubbling and effervescent if he doesn't have that kind of mercy? Krishna was always cheerful. Krishna was always joking. Krishna was always smiling. He was always happy. That's his nature. And when we become attached to him, when we hold on to his lotus feet, when we beg for his mercy and hope that he will give that mercy so that we can better and more properly and more abundantly serve him. And we receive from Krishna that our life is truly successful. That is the success of life, that we are serving in such a way that Krishna and Prabhupada, or your spiritual master, are pleased. And when they are pleased, they will bless us, and our pleasure will increase. But we don't concern ourselves with our pleasure. Our concern is always with their pleasure. Our concern is to forget our little bodies, forget our little minds, forget our intelligence, forget all these things, because after all, when you begin to dwell upon my intelligence, my body, we become very, what we call, self-in-loved, in love with the little body, or selfish love. There's no need for this. So the more we think of Krishna's body, the less we even feel our own body. We begin to feel light and even lightheaded and even a little giddy, because that is the nature of Krishna's blessings. We feel peaceful, we feel joyful and happy. So we have so many different evidences of this. And for example, in the story of Ajamil, that's a very fascinating expression of Krishna's mercy. Here we had this Ajamil when he was a young man. He lived a very brahminical life. He did everything correctly. He performed various sacrifices and ceremonies. He was very well behaved. He spoke nicely. He took care of his parents. He respected them. He had a wife and he treated her nicely. He had all good qualities of a Brahmin. He was pure. He was self-controlled. He was austere. He was tolerant. He was honest. He was knowledgeable. He was wise. And he was also very righteous and very religious. So he had all these wonderful qualities. And yet one day when he was when he went to the forest to gather some fruits at the request of his father, he saw this low-class person, Shudra, laughing and embracing a prostitute. And he looked at this, and he couldn't stop looking. And he continued to look on it, to look at it. He should not have done that. He knew he should not do that. But something within him, something base within him, made him continue to look and look. And that didn't end there, because what we focus upon in a very deep, in a very intense way, does not end there. He went home, and he kept thinking of this scene of this man and woman embracing, laughing. They were drunk. And it got to such a point that he could not resist the temptation of taking that prostitute into his own home and making her a servant. But ultimately what happened is he became her servant. Because whatever she wanted, he would get. If he had, what happened is that his parents died and left him a certain amount of money. And he used the money, not on his wife, he disregarded her, ignored her, had nothing to do with her. All he wanted to do is take care of this prostitute. Okay. So he gave her bangles, he gave her necklaces, he gave her toe rings and finger rings, and whatever, saris, whatever she would want. This went on for 88 years. And she bore him 10 children. Now, the Lord was very, very pleased by that service that he performed. He was pleased. Now, how do we know this? I'll explain. So, Ajamil became corrupt. He didn't think anything of stealing. He didn't think anything of robbing someone, beating someone up, mugging someone, anything to get money to please his prostitute wife. And he felt no compunction. He lost his conscience. He lost his sense of that this was wrongdoing. All the sensitivity, all the refinement, all the culture that he once had was completely out, no more, gone. This could happen to all of us, by the way. We should not think, oh, that's him. No, no, that's us. If we don't stick to the principles, if we think we're so smart and we're so capable and we're so proud and so able to handle all kinds of temptations, well, I won't be affected. This won't bother me. I chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds every day. I go to the morning program. How can I be affected? That's the first killer. As soon as we become proud, as soon as we think that nothing can really bother us, Krishna is protecting me, Prabhupada's protecting me, my guru is protecting me, what have I got to worry about? Plenty to worry about. Maya is so powerful, overwhelming, everywhere present. Srila Prabhupada just say, you boys and girls, you American boys and girls, you don't have any fear of Maya. He says, that's the way you fall down. You seem to think that, you know, she's a pushover. You're the pushover. And she's the one, and you're the one she's going to step on because of your proud, arrogant, and complacent mentality. He says, I'm always thinking of, I think of Maya in the sense of how powerful she was. That makes me depend upon Krishna. So therefore, he was always a dependent. Prabhupada, of course, he was like a general. And he issued, but he did not issue orders like a general on his own behalf. He issued them on his spiritual master's behalf, on Krishna's behalf. He was simply acting as a servant. But he could also act so gently and sweet and lovingly and warm, you know, like a lightning bolt one moment and also like a rose another moment. So this is the nature. So getting back to Ajamil, what happened was that finally it was time for him to leave his body. And he was lying on his bed. And he was dying. And as he was dying, he saw these Yamadutas, or the servants of Lord Yamaraj, and they put this rope around his neck, and they started to pull him out of his, you know, put the subtle body out of the physical body. And as they were doing that, because, and here's the main point, because Ajamil was so attached to his last son, his tenth son, whose name was Narayan, he wanted to see his son before he left. So what he would do, he would cry, "Narayan, Narayan, Narayan, where are you? Narayan." He's crying like that, urgently, desperately, feelingly. And what happened was that at that moment, the Vishnu Dutas appeared on the scene. Four Vishnu Dutas appear there, glowing, radiant, beautiful, looking just like Lord Vishnu. And what do they say? Anybody remember what the first words they said? Stop! They said, stop, stop, to the Yamadutas. So they stopped. They said, who is this person? Who are these glowing beings trying to stop us from doing our duty? And they said to him, how can you stop us from doing this? This is the duty. This is a sinner. We're taking him to Yamaraj. And we're going to bring him there and he's going to get his just punishment. So how can you stop us? So the Vishnu Dutas said, this is a perfectly sinless man. You cannot take a sinless man away. Said, what do you mean sinless? He's chanted the name Narayan. And he's chanted it without any motive, outside of a sense of urgency and desperation. He was not chanting it to get a car. He was not chanting it to get a wife. He was not chanting it for some material motive. He was just chanting out of desperation and urgency. So when he did that, he immediately eradicated all the sins that he had acquired from millions of lives. Therefore, you cannot take him. He said, well, our spiritual master, Yamaraj, he never told us that. He said, well, go back and ask him. He'll tell you. So what happened was that, finally, now, the point I'm trying to bring out is this, is that it wasn't by chance, it wasn't by accident that the child, the tenth child, was named Narayan. Prabhupada mentions in his purport that the tenth child was named Narayan under the urgency or under the direction of the Supreme Lord, so that at the time of death, when he would be 88 years old, he would call out that name and he would eradicate all the sins that he had acquired from his entire life. This is the mercy of God. This is pure grace. This is love. That he made sure that that devotee who worshipped him and honored him and glorified him, bowed down to him when he was younger, but then left the path, he never forgot the early worship. He never forgot the service that he performed. And he paid back that service by making sure that the last child was named Narayan. And when he called Narayan, he was saved. Because right after that, when he came back into his body, it was a near-death experience. He realized everything at that point. He knew how he had gone afoul, how he had gone astray, and what he had to do. So he left the prostitute wife. He went to Haridwar, up in Rishikesh area. And he began chanting Hare Krishna. He lived at a Vishnu temple. And he began meditating on the Supreme Lord. And ultimately, he began to see the Lord within. In fact, he saw four beings that looked like the Lord, who were the same four who had come to him. And they came to him with what? With an airplane to take him back home, back to Godhead. Success, mercy, bliss, kindness, sweetness, generosity. So The Lord is so kind and so sweet, we can learn from Him. And we ourselves not to train our own minds and be begging the Lord, please help me to be more generous, more kind, more sweet, more loving, more considerate, more thoughtful, more feelingful of other beings, and try to give my very most that I can so that they too can become Krishna conscious. So there we see the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Right now He is piling, He is drowning in an avalanche His mercy on all of us. Look, we're sitting here peacefully, quiet. The ceiling isn't falling in. There's no bombs being dropped outside. No guns going off. People are not shouting and screaming. He's given us a peaceful, calm, quiet environment with devotees who are all loving and worshiping and glorifying the Supreme Lord. This is mercy. And I thank the Supreme Lord for all that mercy. And I thank you all for listening to me. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. All glories. Thank you. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or any comments or anything? No? Okay, not today? Okay, maybe next time. Thank you. Enjoy your prasadam. Hare Krishna.